Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby, in for Virginia Prescott. When you hear the word drone, what do you picture? Missile strikes and secret surveillance photos? The blunt nose of a 27-foot MQ-1 Predator? Or do you picture a 2.5-pound quadricopter built in someone's basement from parts bought at the local hobby shop? Military drone strikes aside, small unmanned aerial vehicles are poised to change the way we do business, scientific research, and more. From wildlife conservation to home delivery systems like Amazon's Prime Air initiative. Joining me to discuss the big implications of modestly sized drones is Kashmir Hill, senior online editor at Forbes, where she covers the intersection between privacy, technology, and the law. Hi, Kashmir.
Hi, Taylor.
Also with us is Matt Waite, professor of journalism at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln and founder of the Drone Journalism Lab. Matt, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So, Matt, whether we're talking about military applications or small commercial innovations, a lot of people sort of recoil, I suppose, when they hear the word drone. Do you think there's a danger in maybe lumping them all together?
There is. I have a little $30 quad here sitting on my desk. It's as big as the palm of my hand. To a lot of people, that's a drone. Even though you can't fly it autonomously, it just flies around. And it's a fun little toy, and I give them to students who are first learning how to fly these things because they can't break it and they can't hurt themselves with it. So if that $30 toy and a $130 million Global Hawk are both drones, then I don't think the word has a lot of meaning anymore. The problem is it's a single syllable, and it's easy, and it rolls off the tongue a lot easier than unmanned aerial vehicle or unmanned aerial system or remotely piloted aircraft system is my current favorite.
Okay, so Kashmir, why don't we talk a little bit about where the law currently stands in the U.S. Regarding drones. What's allowed? Do you know how many are out there, that sort of thing?
I'm not sure how many are out there right now, but use is limited to essentially government use. Law enforcement can get a license to use a drone for surveillance purposes. They have been used that way in the U.S. so far, but private use isn't allowed yet. The FAA is supposed to come out with rules that will allow private entities to use them so that Google can send out street view drones and start, you know, mapping the U.S. But technically, they're not supposed to be flown for commercial uses yet. So there is at least one pilot who's trying to challenge that and is saying that the FAA shouldn't be allowed to ban commercial use of drones.
Well, and you're talking about commercial use, but there are exceptions for, say, hobbyists. People who fly remote control airplanes are using a type of drone.
Right. So the drone purists would hate if you called a remote, you know, piloted aircraft, basically a hobby plane, a drone. But yeah, as long as you keep it under 400 feet and you're not getting paid to fly it, you can be using these like small kind of drone-like things.
Okay, so there are a lot of legal matters to consider before drones become commercially viable, whether or not that's for Amazon's delivery service or anybody else who wants to try and use them for business purposes. For example, I suppose liability in case a drone were to, say, fall out of the sky and cause damage or hurt someone. So what are some of those big questions being addressed right now by the FAA and in general?
Well, the FAA is supposed to be making a kind of safety determination, and they say that's why it's taking so long for them to make this decision about drones. Because if Amazon starts, you know, delivering packages with drones, we want to know that the drones aren't going to, you know, run into a power line or land on somebody's cat. But then there are a lot of privacy and surveillance groups who say, well, we want you to be making decisions about the privacy implications of drones as well. Should there be kind of restrictions on what drones are allowed to film, where they can go?
Right. Whose airspace? You know, can my neighbor's drone sort of fly over into my own backyard, and is that my space or is that allowed?
So that actually already happened to a friend of mine in Washington, D.C. A drone crash landed in our backyard, and it had a camera on it, and she and her roommate were really freaked out by it, and they put like a cloth over the camera. But before they did that, they wrote on a piece of paper their phone number and held it in front of the camera, and they soon got a call, and the person said, oh, you know, did you did you catch my lost drone? So these things are already happening, and that's just with hobbyists flying them.
Vision of the future to come, maybe. Between the two of you, you've both reported on many emerging uses or proposed uses for drones, and I'd love to hear some of maybe the most amazing examples you've heard about. Matt, you first. Where have you been surprised to see the possible applications of drones?
Well, I live in an agricultural state, so hearing about a lot of the uses that are emerging around agriculture, I mean, the agricultural uses, honestly, will probably dwarf most of the other uses, including law enforcement. Farmers all across the country will soon have these and will be able to monitor their crops, you know, by the hour, by the minute. Around here, we've talked about using them to specifically identify weed species that are bad for crops, and being able to go out and apply only the amount of weed killer that would be required to kill that weed, which would vastly reduce the amount of chemicals in fields and honestly the cost. My other kind of favorite example is golf courses.
Hmm.
If you've ever played golf on a day that they watered the course, there are parts of it that are swampy. Well, if a golf course owner had a way to monitor where it needed to be watered and where it didn't, they'd be able to vastly reduce the amount of water that is put on a golf course, increase the golf course's environmental sustainability, and also free up that water to, you know, grow food or quench your thirst.
Kashmir, how about you? Favorite drone story thus far?
I mean, I tend to be interested in privacy and surveillance issues, so those are my favorite drone stories. There's a drone that was used in Dallas by an environmental activist who flew over a kind of private area around a meatpacking factory and discovered that all this blood was being basically sent into the river there, and he took pictures with a drone and then, you know, sent those in to regulators to check out. I've heard of paparazzi already starting to use drones more outside of the U.S. than in the U.S. You know, there was a celebrity wedding happening in a remote area, and photographers were not allowed there and couldn't get access, but they were able to fly drones, you know, on the cliff face and take photos.
I'm talking about small unmanned aerial vehicles or drones with Kashmir Hill, senior online editor at Forbes, and Matt Waite, founder of the Drone Journalism Lab. Matt, you founded the Drone Journalism Lab to research how drones could be used for reporting purposes. We just heard one side of that, the paparazzi, maybe a little creepy there. But what other uses do you think drones could have for journalism?
Well, the original idea that I had came at a digital mapping conference, and it was a company was selling a device that was billed as a fully autonomous aerial mapping platform, where it had a camera in the bottom of it, and it was like a fixed-wing aircraft, and you plugged in a flight plan that included you just drawing a little rectangle around a large area that you wanted photographed, tell it where you wanted it to take off from and where you wanted it to land, and off it would go, and it would fly back and forth and back and forth and back and forth across that area, taking pictures the whole time. The thing would land, you'd pull the memory card out of the camera, plug it into this tablet computer that they sold you, and it would stitch all those images together into a composite high-resolution image of the ground. And I thought of every hurricane and tornado and flood and wildfire that I'd ever covered as a reporter. I'm like, this is it. We could do really highly accurate damage assessment stories in natural disasters in a matter of hours. There's a number of different things that you can do with these things that don't involve stalking celebrities and violating people's privacy that I think would be really useful in terms of the public's understanding of things going on around them.
What's interesting about this to me is that it reveals that there is really a great power in the drone, like many other technologies, to be used or abused depending on who's behind the controls. If in 2015 the FAA relaxes restrictions on commercial use of drones, do we know whether or not they're going to be able to have the manpower or ability to, say, crack down on unauthorized use or prosecute people who are using drones for illicit purposes?
The truth is we don't know what the FAA is going to do at this point. We've picked up little dribs and drabs of hints here and there that it's highly likely that there's going to be some kind of licensing setup that in order to fly commercially, you will need to have some level of pilot training. That may be FAA ground school. That may be something more significant than that. You will almost certainly have to take a test. You'll almost certainly have to get a license. They've said you may have to submit to a background check.
Mm.
you will almost certainly have to provide safety data. So if something crashes, they need the data from that to find out why and what could have happened, that they can look into it. You'll have to do some self-reporting. There's talk in a lot of circles about flight plan approval, of having to file flight plans and having them approve that, although that from a manpower standpoint, that's almost completely unworkable. For me, as a journalist, I get worried about talk of things like flight plan approval and prior approval of flights, because it opens up an avenue for prior restraint cases, where if the government doesn't like the kind of reporting that I want to do with a UAV, they can deny me a permit to go fly that day, and that has First Amendment implications that I'm not sure the FAA has thought through completely or is thinking about.
So we've been talking here mostly about the legality of flying drones in the U.S. What's the status of flying drones outside of the country? Matt, what do you think?
You can essentially group most countries in the world into one of three groups. There's the U.S. where we stand alone in the no, you can't do it, nobody, no, none. Countries that do have rules generally are pretty restrictive, and they have a pretty significant regulatory scheme in place, but commercial operation is possible. You can fly commercially in Canada. You can fly commercially in the UK. In Australia, ESPN and Fox Sports use UAVs to cover things like cricket matches or Australian rules football games, because commercial operations are allowed there.
And then actually, I think I saw drones being used in Sochi, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Actually, you very much did, and they were being used there. The kind of third group of countries in the world is they haven't even begun to consider this, and so there's no rules at all. So it varies by country to country, and there are countries that are significantly further down the road on this than the U.S.
Kashmir, last question to you. I know that new technology has a way of making waves. We've heard about 3D printers being used to make guns, or whether or not self-driving cars are vulnerable to hacking. And I'm wondering if, as somebody who covers technology on a regular basis, in the end, do you think that advancing tech tends to win out over hesitations over possible misuse or mistrust?
Yeah, I mean, I think whenever we're talking about new technologies, we always go to the extreme cases. And that's just how we like to think about these things. It's how advocates and people debating the issues like to think about things. But it does feel like technology keeps pushing forward, and it is hard to hold back. And technology often moves forward faster than the law. The only time I've really seen technology kind of effectively held back is around facial recognition. And, you know, Google has said that they have the power to do kind of universal facial recognition at this point, but they're holding it back because they think it's creepy. And I think it's very rare that actually happens.
Kashmir Hill is senior online editor at Forbes, where she covers privacy and technology. Thanks so much for speaking with us today.
My pleasure.
And Matt Waite, professor of journalism at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln and founder of the Drone Journalism Lab, thank you too.
Happy to do it.